Hey guys, just want to let you know the Patreon is up. Check it out, patreon.com.
Is that, we're not doing Patreon anymore?
Media podcasts for all your extra Beer City Media needs. Now on with the show.
Benedict Canyon, high above Los Angeles. And standing out amongst all others, this palatial residence is famously home to the stars. It's also infamous for one of America's most iconic crimes, the shocking scene of mass murder on the orders of crazed cult leader Charles Manson.
I'm not asking you, I'm telling you, you do exactly what I say.
It may have been 50 years ago, but time does nothing to ease the horror.
Whatever is necessary to do, do it.
People were slaughtered here in the dead of the night, including the stunning and heavily pregnant Hollywood actress Sharon Tate.
Welcome. Wait, what? Welcome, what?
Wait, is this why you invited me here?
Surprise!
Lock the door, April.
Fuck.
Our editing monkey is back, which means we're back. Welcome to the Conspiracy Theory Podcast with Ryan, Larry, Springhill, Josh. How the hell did we do this again? And then the Luma Mommy herself, Miss April. And on today's episode, ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, Charles Manson.
There's a time for living. The time keeps on flying. Think you're loving, baby, and all you're doing is crying. Can you feel? Are those feelings real? Look at your game, girl. Look at your game, girl. What a mad delusion, living in that confusion, frustration and doubt. Can you ever live without game?
Shoot Kitchen Studio 2022. Sad. Welcome back.
Welcome back.
It's Tuesday, which means we should be in bed.
Yeah. We're I do that right now.
Time for Metamucil.
I don't need that.
We know. God, do we know.
I'm young and spry. Oh, that's right. And welcome back to Soundboard 2022. Always good to have you. Punctual as always.
Nice.
So I missed you guys. It's been a minute. Should we just say, hey, we're coming back. We're trying this out. We missed each other. And, well, we're just going to keep going and going. And hopefully you guys are liking us on all this stuff, I guess. I don't know.
Yeah.
Anybody have anything they want to say?
Before we end this bad bear so I can go home?
We've got a guy in the corner with a sniper rifle trained on Larry. Just kidding. Yeah. We don't. We love him. Everybody's here of their free will.
Yes.
We're having a good time. We're sitting.
Wow.
Ever the optimist, Larry, yep, 2022.
I've gotten grumpier in the time off, actually.
How does that work?
You know what? What really did it for me was I had a really realization this past week that I am the same age my dad was when I graduated high school.
I had the same fucking realization this week. I'm not even kidding you.
Did you put a gun in your mouth like I did?
I thought he was the fucking King Tut, like out of a tomb, like ancient.
Yeah. Yeah. Uh-huh. Yes.
Yep.
Watching Fox News, eating nuts out of a mug with a spoon.
I also discovered something coincidentally this week.
Oh, God.
That I'm the same age my stepdad was when he met my mom. And I was like, oh boy, he had a house.
Was he already in New Balance era at that point?
Oh yeah. Oh yeah. He had a 70s porn stash too.
Well,
Josh's dad was born in New Balances.
And jorts.
With a tucked in, like, ratty graphic t-shirt.
Which he probably still owns to this day.
Oh yeah. Yep.
Oh, goodness gracious. Well, here's to the back nine, fellas. But anyway.
I'm on the last three of that back nine, by the way. I'm playing through.
Well, I just told you guys today, I had a really shocking moment when I had my kids in music class, and they're like, today we're going to study a historical figure in music. I'm like, oh my God, Aretha Franklin? Who is it? Stevie Wonder? No, fucking Beyonce.
Dinosaur.
All, yeah. Right? Well, and it was like this kid's video. Like, today we're going to talk about Beyonce. Beyonce started her amazing career in a band called Destiny's Child. And all these kids, there was one kid that literally looked at me and said, is that Rosa Parks?
Put your hands up because I'm not going to the front of the bus.
Yeah. She all the single ladies.
I just love the idea that one kid too is looking at that like, Destiny's Child formed in 1994. That was after my mom was born. Slightly.
Yeah. It's
or whatever. Yeah. It's like when you find out like kids are like, yeah, I was born after 9/11. Mm-hmm. It's like, excuse me?
Yep.
You weren't missing class, quote unquote, because you were hungover?
Matter of fact, I was born exactly 9 months after 9/11.
Wow, weird.
9/8. Oh. Someone's tower went up.
That's right.
Oh, God.
That's right.
Oh, Lord.
Yes, all the single grandmothers.
God. Oh. Put your canes up.
Oh, my Lord.
Well, as always, with coming back, I think a lot of it has to do with we just have so many things we wanted to cover.
True. Right, as we had described on the last episode.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
That's true.
I mean, if you want to know what we talked about, we're not going to cover it again. So just go back and listen to that.
Yeah.
Listen to it twice.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Listen to it first and then listen to this and then go back and listen to it.
Yeah.
Whoa. Listen to it backwards.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe you'll hear a hidden message. You won't, but you might.
I mean, I've heard of people hearing messages from politicians just based on video footage that they watched online.
Mm-hmm.
And I mean, who's to say? I mean, Larry's an editing whiz.
Mm-hmm.
There could be some subliminal shit in there.
Yeah,
we could have created
sure.
like fetishes we don't even know about.
Fetishes.
I'm into Barack Obama, My Little Pony porn, and I had no idea.
Look, there's...
It's already happened.
Oh, soundboard. All right, well, as do we on every episode, we have to pull the Thunderbird to the side of the road and get real with it. We have to ask ourselves a question. Now, when it comes to... Oh, I missed you, buddy. When it comes to things that deal with sociopaths,
okay,
do
like podcasts?
Do you ever feel like there's in your life? Now we covered a lot of serial killers in the past.
Mm-hmm.
We even covered cult leaders. You ever get the feeling like you've met somebody that's possibly could start a cult?
Yes.
Do you know where I work?
That's exactly what I was thinking.
Yeah.
I do.
Okay.
Yeah. Just saying.
Well, I think everybody would say a resounding yes to that, though.
Oh, sorry. Something happened today at work. And
it's like, hold on.
Okay. So I went into stopped at a gas station, went to the bathroom, came back out, and someone had plastered I did that Joe Biden sticker on my mail truck. Like, what? I'm responsible for that, you asshole. Now I've got a fucking sticker.
Oh my God.
That I gotta scrape off the side of the truck. That isn't yours, dickweed. Don't be freaking.
I never understand that like everybody can just solely blame a sitting president for.
But it makes
all
no sense.
Problems.
I did that and it just points at my mail truck. You did
yeah,
what?
Like did what?
Like, what
like,
did
at
he
least,
do?
Like ones that are on gas pumps, like point to the price.
No, this is just pointing.
You did that. You did. You built
behind
that
my truck.
What? Good job, Joe Biden.
I tell you one thing, Dale Earnhardt Jr. would be here today if it wasn't for fuck you, Joe Biden.
What in Dale Jr.'s going on here with that mail truck? Let me put on here one of these diggers.
That first class letter did not get here on time.
That's right.
It was Biden. Anyways, oh, we'll future episode. Who knows?
Right.
Charles Manson. Bad poet. Decent musician, I'd say.
Yeah.
At least he is of that era. He sounds like, you know.
Until you listen to the lyrics and you're like, what the?
Look at your game, girl.
Better than
garbage dump? Really? You're singing to a garbage dump.
I mean, he was singing about his refrigerator.
Still better than the TikTok Island Boy. Just saying, throwing that out there. That's now my measurement of like what's good and bad music. If it's better than Island Boy, we're doing okay.
I just don't understand who thought it was the proper thing to videotape a couple of meth heads and, you know,
in a hot tub. Yeah, makes no sense.
And make it a TikTok thing. But
I feel like, okay, they're trying to make music and they seem to be getting unwarranted hate, or did I miss something?
I mean,
I don't think they did anything bad, did they?
It was, other than the music. Just bad music.
Okay.
Like, and they have, it's
but
a bit
I mean,
of,
they've gotten dragged.
Well, it's a bit of cultural appropriation, like the Jamaican, because I don't think they're not Jamaican, right?
You don't know.
Josh has been culturally appropriating every episode we've ever had. It's fine. Just kidding. Shots fired. What season are we on at this point?
Season
six and a half. 5.5. I don't know.
All right, 5.5. Give us reviews.
Season six.
Five stars. We still
season five was on Netflix, so it was only 10 episodes.
It had that special French guest director.
Oh, no.
A terrible
something's show. Just...
Never change. Well, this French is okay, right? We can still make fun of the French.
Okay, so real talk.
Yeah. My friend's a French listener.
I do have a French friend, but no, April and I regularly do hear Asian accent around the house. That really bad. I don't know why.
You know what? Sometimes
there are many cultures in the Asian community. So we didn't say which one.
Right.
The shredder one. The master
Well, never mind. That's out the window. Send your hate mail to Larry _. No,
look, if it's Shredder, he's not any particular race because he's a rat, right? So you're just doing a rat accent.
Wait, hold on.
Rat scent.
You think Shredder's the rat?
Isn't that the rat?
No, that's Master Splinter.
Oh, well, they're all the same to me.
Is a Roko Saki. Okay. Thank you very much.
She calls all your game units Nintendos, doesn't she?
Turn off your Nintendos and come to bed. I got a joystick you can mess with.
Wait, what?
Surprise!
And we're off accents. All right, here we go. So, Charles Manson. Anyway, so I asked the question, the hypothetical. Mm-hmm. We all agree we've met somebody, I would assume, at some point.
Sure. Oh, yeah.
Yeah, this could be a crazy, crazy dude. Like I said, bad poet. Also, kind of like a demo version of L. Ron Hubbard. I wouldn't say a full like cult leader, because I mean he did influence pretty much a swath of Haight-Ashbury kids in the late 60s. And I get that he has charisma. Sure. There's something there. It's kind of like it's a weird amalgamation of basically who he was growing up and what he did. And as far as his time, because he did spend a fair amount of time early on in a home for boys and then later on in prison. So according to the Wikipedia on Charles Miles Manson was born November 12th, 1934, which would make him a Sagittarius, I think.
That explains a lot.
Yeah, that's right. My ex-wife. No, I'm just kidding.
I am.
Do you want me to edit that out?
No.
Just in case your kids listen to this later.
It's a positive co-parenting situation. We are the American family.
I know. You keep chanting that yourself while you rock back and forth.
Saying, I folded it wrong. I folded it wrong.
That's a callback.
Back and better than ever. So, American criminal, as is known by the Wikipedia, who led the Manson family, a cult based in California in the late 1960s. Some of the members committed a series of 9 murders at 4 locations in July and August 1969. So, in his early life, Charles Manson was born, like I said, November 12th, to 16-year-old Kathleen Manson Bauer Cavender, who, yeah, 16. Ouchies. Mm-hmm. Like, brand new mom in the 30s.
Brand new driver.
Yeah, exactly. So he was born at the University of Cincinnati Academic Health Center in Cincinnati, Ohio. He was named Charles Miles Maddox upon arrival to Earth. So Manson's biological father appears to have been Colonel Walker Henderson Scott Sr. of Catesburg, Kentucky, against whom Kathleen Maddox filed a paternity suit that resulted in an agreed judgment in 1937. Do you know how much, just offhand, you want to guess how much she got basically as a result of this?
$76 like, and a bucket of chicken.
1937 child support, what that looks like.
Boy.
I'm going to say $3.
Close. Five.
Hey, it's more than I'm getting
hot
now.
Hot damn! Yeah,
still more than we're getting.
Fuck you, bum, Biden. Bum, bum,
bum. Oh, well.
Scott worked intermittently in local mills and had a local reputation. This is Charlie's dad. As a con artist, he allowed Maddox to believe that he was an army colonel, although colonel was merely his given name. It's like if you meet a guy like, my name's Marshall and I'm a marshal. That's, but then again, you know what, kids? You can all name yourself whatever you want sure. to. This is a new America.
Mm-hmm.
If you want to be Grimace, you can be Grimace. Mm-hmm. If you want to be the Hamburglar, you can be the Hamburglar.
It'll cost you.
It'll yeah. cost you.
Some court fees, but you can do it.
Did you see the movie about that, by the way, The Founder?
No.
It was really good. You should watch that. Just thought I would pull the Thunderbird real quick to the side mm-hmm. of the road and give out movie recommendations.
Sure, of course.
So... anyway, so when Maddox told Scott that she was pregnant, he told her he had been called away on army business after several months.
That's his version of, I'm going to go to the store to get some smokes. And
basically,
I've got some warring to do. I'll be back after I war.
Urgent calls for the colonel. So after several months, she realized he had no intention of returning. Manson may never have known his biological father, and I think he would have talked about it. He did write a book called Manson on Manson, which is...
sounds kinky.
Yeah, but this is pre, like, any of that, like... And again, this isn't a serial killer episode, per se, mm-hmm. in case... because I think for the longest time, especially when I was a kid, I was like, Charles Manson, that's a serial killer. And it wasn't until I actually delved into it, I was like, no, he's not. He's just, like, a shitty... drifter.
He didn't kill anybody.
No. Mm-hmm. Well, he shot somebody he thought he killed.
Mm.
But we'll get to, I think his name was like Papatronics or something, like some weird African American drug dealer type, but we'll get to his name later. Anyway, okay. So he did shoot somebody.
Mm-hmm.
But still, like, all intents and purposes, from what I've seen, like, he doesn't seem like a killer. He just seems like a guy who literally runs his mouth. He's like the worst member of Slipknot, like the one who doesn't really get it. He just shows up with a frisbee on his head and he's like, I'm the auxiliary percussion number three.
He's like that old cartoon where it's the little tiny chihuahua and the big giant bulldog. And yeah. the little tiny chihuahua talks all kinds of shit because he knows the bulldog will like
back him up.
Yeah.
He's like, I'm from Slipknot. And he's the slide whistle player for Slipknot.
Exactly. You cannot hear anything over the 10 guitars. Meanwhile, the 10th member of Slipknot is really, you know, having yep. his way behind all the...
Incidentally, the great-grandson yeah. of the slide whistle player from the...
From our past episodes. Yeah. See, previous episode. Yeah. We're bringing it back around today.
The slide whistle was passed down generations. Use the same one, too. Mm-hmm. Kept it well-oiled.
It's in one of those 30s. Exactly, like one of those old like gold cases yep. that just had.
Velvet-lined.
The great-grandson of the slide whistle player of... No, wait. Don't. Ooh. Let me think.
Okay. He's got this.
He is from the Glenn Miller Band.
Exactly. Yep. Yay! That's right. Anyway, so In August of 1934, before Manson's birth, Maddox married, this would be the mom, married William Eugene Manson, a laborer at a dry cleaning business. Maddox often went on drinking sprees with her brother, Luther, leaving Charles with multiple babysitters. So she was not what I would say a good mom, but again, referencing Manson on Manson, and he thought his mom was the shit. He, you know, he considered her like himself, just to be kind of a career criminal, just like a, like almost like I imagine if there was a at the time, like an equivalent to like a Harley Quinn, that was kind of like, cause it was all, he was hanging out with a bunch of Batman villains, basically like the really corny ones, like with that came out of like Superman comic strip looking things.
Man.
Yeah. Man, we're pulling them all back.
You know, canned what? Vegetable man.
Exactly.
The bagger.
The street sweeper.
Mr. Bagger, I hate to say this, but my bag broke. Ow!
Scurries away.
Mr. Policeman! No, that's just my name. My name is Sarge, but I'm not really a policeman. Why does everybody confuse me?
Batman's like, I'll double bag him. And everybody applauded.
That's right. A new Batman movie coming in the next 3 weeks as we say this. Have you gotten more cynical as far as movies? Yeah.
What do you think?
I was going to say, I saw the trailer for that and I felt a tear well in my eye and I go, no, if Larry was here and he saw this.
I saw the trailer and I think it looks good.
Okay, cool.
Okay.
All right.
Which I can't say for like Batman's for a while.
True. The nipple suits. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I was like, nope, not Larry's not watching that just because of that stupid suit.
Anyway.
Why? Why do you have to put nipples on a suit?
Because you're not? Joel Schumacher and you thought, hey, I've been gay in Hollywood for a long time.
Could be worse. Could be Bryan Singer who made that decision and just be a big dong on the front.
All right, X-Men, circle up. It's time for a pool party.
Future episode.
That's right. It's true. Mm-hmm. So, so as she's leaving to go drink with people, in fact, there's a story in Manson on Manson where his mom literally almost sold him for a pitcher of beer. Literally, I mean,
is it good beer?
Wow.
This waitress was like, oh, he's a cute little thing. And she's like, hey, you want him? Pitcher of the PBR, and I'll take him. And literally, she had to come back and get him later because the waitress did try to take him.
Oh, my God.
So.
Just put it on my tab. No, that's my son. His name is Tab. Actually, it's Sarah Palin's kid, Tab. I just adopted him.
Tab. That's what he says. Anyway, so the mom who married the other alcoholic guy got divorced. And now his last name was Manson. So Maddox took Manson as his last name. On August 1st, 1939, Luther and Kathleen Maddox were arrested for assault and robbery. Kathleen and Luther were sentenced to 5 and 10 years of imprisonment, respectively. Manson was placed in the home of his aunt and uncle in McMenon, West Virginia. His mother was paroled in 1942. Manson later characterized the first weeks after she returned from prison as the happiest time in his life.
Aww. Aww.
That's good.
He's like, oh, mom.
Hold the door open. And
can you teach me some of those card grifting tricks? That's like Christmas with a thief, mom.
Oh, yeah.
So, mom, how do you always know which card some dupe has in his hand? And they do the, see, because it's the 30s.
Right, of course. So, everyone did that in the 30s.
Indeed. So she, okay. Now, while he was in school, he was especially truant. He did not like to show up. He liked to kind of live the willy-nilly 40s era bad kid.
Mm-hmm.
His mom was arrested for grand larceny, but not convicted. The family later moved to Indianapolis, where Maddox met an alcoholic with the last name Lewis through Alcoholics Anonymous meetings and married him in August of 1943. So she tried to go on the straight and narrow, went to AA, met some guy, and
And then
third time's a charm. Exactly.
I guess.
Now, these are some of Manson's first offenses. In an interview with Diane Sawyer, Manson said that when he was 9, he set his school on fire. Manson also got in trouble for truancy and petty theft, although there was a lack of foster home placements. In 1947, at the age of 13, Manson was placed in the Gibault School for Boys in Terre Haute, Indiana. Now, a school for boys in Indiana was not good. In fact, every single place that Manson goes to in prison afterwards, he said, was a fucking vacation compared to this school for boys. Because it was just basically getting raped, getting assaulted physically, the guards physically and sexually. Like, it was every single bad thing you would think would happen, happened. So Manson ran away from Gibault and slept in the woods under bridges and wherever else he could find shelter. Manson fled home to his mother and spent Christmas 1947 in McMenon at his aunt and uncle's house. His mother returned him to Gibault, the school, 10 months later. He ran away to Indianapolis. So, like, he gets back in. He's like, fuck this, I'm out. I don't need to deal with this. I don't think he ever... I think once he got a taste of, like, regular jail in Gen Pop and things were a little more cohesive, then he was cool with it. But at this time, he's like, fuck jail. I'm Splitsville. I'm out. I'm going. So, however, Manson found... when he went to... I mentioned Indianapolis. When Manson went there, he committed his first known crime by robbing a grocery store, which is generally pretty specific to killers and or bad dudes.
Yeah.
Usually it escalates into robbery at some point.
Although you'd have to think, though, like, if he's on his own, was it more out of, like, necessity than...
Pretty much, yeah.
You know?
I mean, Larry mentioned it earlier when you mentioned one of his songs was called Garbage Dump. Like, that's how they ate. And they found the restaurants that literally the moment they were dumping all their, like, you know, this just expired today or yesterday, they were there.
Yeah. It's
like, yeah, I'm in the mood for some fast food.
Yeah.
But he wouldn't eat at the Burger King dumpster.
Right.
He had standards.
He had standards.
I see you're still a heathen.
I see. You just imagine them all in the McDonald's dumpster next door, but then, like, a bird lands on the Burger King trash bin. It takes a little peck and then just X eyes falls over. So, for a time, Manson had a job delivering messages for Western Union. That's right. They just threw out the Big Macs.
I just imagine them digging out of a McDonald's dumpster and a Burger King guy comes out with, like, a tray of fresh burgers. And they're like, guys,
no.
Look, this is for you. And they're like,
I'll pass.
Hard pass. We'll take dumpster McDonald's.
So, while he's working at Western Union in an attempt to live a life free of crime, it kind of backfires. He quickly began to supplement his wages through petty theft. He was eventually caught, and in 1949, a sympathetic judge sent him to Boys Town, a juvenile facility in Omaha, Nebraska, which was featured in our Franklin cover-up episode. After 4 days at Boys Town, he and fellow student Blackie Nielsen obtained a gun and stole a car. Keep on rocking in the free world,
man,
fellas.
He's ambitious.
He is. Like, he never found a grift he didn't like. It's like, hey, what are we doing this week? Bars, sing. Let's go see my mama. She likes to get swap me for beer.
You said rocking in the free world. I can't seem to find any Neil Young here on Spotify.
I'm sorry.
I wonder why that is.
Topical. So, when they got that gun, they used it to commit two armed robberies on their way to the home of Nielsen's uncle in Peoria, Illinois. Nielsen's uncle was a professional thief, which to me, I always picture, like, a British accent guy with, like, a weird, like a
monocle or...
No,
he's got one of those black face masks, and he's got black pants and the black and white striped shirt, and he's in that,
like a cat burglar.
Sneaky pose. Yeah.
Yeah.
In a beret.
I feel like...
Oh, for sure.
Or am I just thinking of a mime?
A little of A, a little column B, yeah. Actually, I think he robbed a mine.
Miming a robbery.
He robbed a mine.
He was miming a robbery.
Yeah. Well, when you say professional thief, I feel like there's like a resume involved.
Right.
Mm-hmm. You show up in your uniform with, you know, show up at the interview in the stripey.
Yeah, of course.
Right.
Just for the job you want, mm-hmm. not the job you've got.
A professional thief has like a top drawer where everyone keeps their socks and underwear, but it's just of like white gloves. They just pull out and they're just nicely displayed, mm-hmm. all of his robbing gloves.
And right on top of the what is it, like the armoire or whatever, mm-hmm. below on top of the shelf, there's like a feather duster that they use to like every time a little cat hair lands on the white glove.
Yep.
Like,
oh, can't have that.
Nope. No trace. So anyway, he goes and sees this professional thief. When the boys arrived, he allegedly took them on his apprentices. Manson was arrested 2 weeks later during a nighttime raid on a Peoria store. In the investigation that followed, he was linked to his two earlier armed robberies. He was sent to the Indiana Boys School, a strict reform school. So it's like he got went right back to hell.
These schools don't seem to work at all.
No. No. No, because like what? Like a week later, he's like, that's it, Barnes.
Just a place where all a bunch of criminal children can teach each other more crime.
Right. I'm more impressed with the fact that every time they put him in one, he's always able to escape. Mm-hmm. Like he really, that's pretty impressive.
You would think they'd put him in like some kind of solitary confinement.
Right. This is like Ted Bundy levels. I know. I was escape.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Cause like, and Ted Bundy was, I always forget about how methodical he was. Mm-hmm. Like he lost 35 pounds to break out of the Florida jail.
Yeah.
He just knew that it's the same thing with Manson. They're both people. They knew how to figure out like Ted knew that the head jailer was going to be with his girlfriend the night that he broke out. So he went up into the dude's apartment, mm-hmm. and literally just like drove a car out just based on knowing where people are.
Right.
And kind of getting the sense of like the community. And it's the same thing with Manson. He ran away from the school 18 times.
Jeez.
Does the school not get the hint?
No.
He doesn't want to be there.
They just want to learn, teach. They just want to teach.
They just want to beat children.
Yeah,
beat
right?
him and then probably rape. Yeah, so while at the school, Manson developed a self-defense
technique. Didn't know it was a Catholic school.
Technique he later called the insane game. Interesting. Hmm. When he was physically.
New segment.
Yeah, right? This is called the insane game.
You win.
I forgot about that.
Yep, still works.
When he was physically unable to defend himself, he would screech, grimace, and wave his arms to convince aggressors that he was insane.
That's a grimace.
Just start flinging his poop.
Mm-hmm. I have the image of Kermit the Frog going, yay!
Yeah, right?
Right?
Like the gif.
I mean, it sounds right. That's the one thing that I've been told is like, as a woman, if you're ever in a position where you are afraid you're going to be raped, to put your finger down your throat and throw up because it like grosses out the dude that's going to rape you. So, I mean, it makes sense. Like that could be very off-putting to someone who's about to assault him to like be as weird and off-putting as possible.
Yeah, like basically, and that's a great point though, that the concept of just like losing basically. Yeah. Cause I mean,
because they're expecting your reaction to be one thing. And when it's something completely,
completely
the opposite
different.
Direction, they're like, on to the next.
Puking was not part of this robbery.
Exactly.
This is not my thing.
Just your luck. I can work with this.
Ah, fuck. New kink unlocked.
Let's just see that little Skyrim counter that says perversion and it goes up to 100. So when he was physically unable to defend himself, like he said, he'd screech, grimace, wave his arms to convince aggressors that he was insane. After a number of failed attempts, he escaped with two other boys in February of 1951. The three escapees were robbing filling stations or gas stations while attempting to drive to California in stolen cars when they were arrested in Utah for the federal crime of driving a stolen car across state lines. Manson, because of this, was sent to Washington, D.C.'s National Training School for Boys. On arrival, he was given aptitude tests, which determined that he was illiterate, but he had an IQ of 109.
Wow.
So he's pretty smart.
Mm-hmm.
What'd you guys score on your
I don't even remember. Yours was high. That's all I remember.
Mine was so high that I could be in Mensa.
Yeah.
I remember that. I don't remember.
There, excuse me. Have you thought about being a cult leader? Scientology.
Who says
just,
I'm not?
Tom Cruise calls you up.
Yeah, I'm a mom. It's the same thing.
Aluma mommy.
Yeah.
So anyway, his first imprisonment on a psychiatrist's. Thank you. Recommendation, Manson was transferred in October of 51 to Natural Bridge Honor Camp, a minimum security institution. His aunt, who he had stayed with previously, visited him and told administrators she would let him stay at her house and would help him find work. Manson had a parole hearing scheduled in February 52. However, in January, he was caught raping a boy at knife point.
And I was just going to say that, like, honor camp... Mm-hmm. Sounds like a place that would have a snack shack and like one of those lake blobs. Nope, they just raped kids. Okay, never mind. Moving on.
It's like a fucked up version of Friday the 13th. Like Jason comes out and he's like, that's it. Exactly.
Yeah.
So he was transferred to the Federal Reformatory in Petersburg, Virginia. There he committed a further 8 serious disciplinary offenses, 3 involving homosexual acts. He was then moved to a maximum security reformatory at Chillicothe, Ohio, where he was expected to remain until his release on his 21st birthday in November of 1955.
Yeah, Ohio's a punishment.
Mm-hmm.
That's true.
Just drop him off in Ohio.
That's right. Any
that might be considered cruel and unusual according to the Constitution, though.
Drop them off right in the middle.
What is the state motto of Ohio? Because I know Indiana is Crossroads of America.
It's fuck. You're in Ohio.
It's help. How do we get out of here?
All we've got is Cleveland.
And that one basketball player already left. Damn it.
Well, hope you enjoy silence.
Ohio. Even LeBron hated it.
Okay, so
Ohio. Dave Chappelle accidentally moved here.
Yeah. So Manson did get married at one point. He married a waitress named Rosalie Jean Willis around October, about 3 months after he and his pregnant wife arrived in L.A. in a car he had stolen in Ohio. Manson was again charged with
even Manson didn't want to stay in Ohio.
Nope.
He was like, fuck this shit, I'm out.
Well, he got the urges. I remember I was watching a documentary about this, and it's from the perspective of his music career, which is actually pretty fascinating. Because, I mean, you played a clip from one of his songs, but like he had learned how to play a piano when he was a little boy. And
by the way, that song has 2.5 million listens on Spotify.
Wow.
I wonder who gets the royalties.
I have 7.
Sorry.
You just have to start a cult and kill some people.
I was one of
them.
It's a lot of work, man.
I know, but you know, it's never too late.
That's true.
It's never too late to murder. I mean, that is true.
Yeah.
In January of 1955, like I said, is when he got married and he committed that crime. Because, like, basically he gets married and he doesn't... I think initially, because after all this time back and forth into boys' school and in prison, I think he finally was like, I'm going to try. And that marriage was him trying to go on the straight and narrow. And it just didn't work. So he had a psychiatric evaluation. He was given 5 years probation after driving a vehicle across state lines. I hit some Michigan highway. What do they call those? The holes? Potholes.
Yeah.
I hit those with my words.
I thought
sometimes.
You were on the rumble strip.
Yeah,
via exactly. Cuckoo.
I was falling asleep posting and I hit the vocal rumble strips. Yeah. So anyway, Manson's failure to appear at a Los Angeles hearing on an identical charge filed in Florida resulted in his March 1956 arrest in Indianapolis. His probation was revoked. He had 3 years imprisonment at Terminal Island in L.A. While Manson was in prison, Rosalie gave birth to their son, Charles Manson Jr., during his first year at Terminal Island. Manson received visits from Rosalie and his mother, who were now living together in L.A. In March of 57, when the visits from his wife ceased, his mother informed him Rosalie was living with another man.
Mm. Ooh.
Which has got to be hard, because that was his one period where he's like, yep, gonna try. I'm gonna do it. Gonna try. And then it's like,
you got fucked.
She found a fisherman or something. You know, because those guys back then,
they get around, those fishermen.
Yeah.
I guess
that yellow slicker.
Well,
and the beard.
Studs.
Always clean, because they clean fish.
No.
Sort of. Actually, they're covered in
the fish are guts. Clean.
That's true.
Is his name Gordon, too?
It was. They're all named Gordon.
They're all named Gordon.
So, less than 2 weeks before a scheduled parole hearing, Manson tried to escape by stealing a car. He was given 5 years probation, and his parole was denied. We're going to take a break. We come back. We're going to talk about the crimes, the Manson family, the trial, and a verdict.
You know, you were sentenced to the gas chamber, and then they modified the death penalty. Were you happy when that was done?
Was I happy when what was done?
When you found out that you weren't going to the gas chamber.
You're talking about dying. Now, it gets me nervous.
Why?
Did you have any thoughts about something? Was you wanting to go anywhere?
Were you happy when you found out you weren't going to go to the gas chamber, Charles?
I knew I wasn't going to go to the gas chamber because I hadn't done anything wrong.
You scared to die?
Sometimes I feel I'm scared to live. Living is what scares me. Dying is easy. How long have I been in jail? 34 years? 34 years, so...
out of 47, you've been here 34.
I've been in jail, prison, a long time, all my life. I was raised up in here. So I understand jail. So I understand myself, and I can deal with that. I set my cell, and I do my number, like a convict does his number. But there's different colors on different people's backs doing different things. It's a different world. I love the world I live in, too, just like Regan loves the world he lives in.
You love the world you live in?
Most assuredly, it's me.
You love all the pain that you've caused people, the anguish you've caused.
Oh, I don't know pain. I don't know pain. I have no depth of pain. I have no depth of suffering. I don't know ridicule. I don't know all the bad things. I haven't been punished by you all my life since I was 10 years old. I've been in every reform school you got across the country and used to lay down and have to get my ass whipped till I couldn't walk. Tell me about some pain.
And that's our fault. That's all those people
want. No fault. Make strong, good pain. Understand pain. Not bad. Pain's not bad. It's good. It teaches you things. It teaches you things. Like when you put your hand in fire, you know not to do that again. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, I understand that.
Oh, garbage dump. Oh, garbage dump. Why are you called a garbage dump? Oh, garbage dump. Oh, garbage dump. Why are you called a garbage dump? You could feed the world with my garbage dump. You could feed the world with my garbage dump. You could feed the world with my garbage dump. That sums it up in one big lump.
When you're quality rhymes.
I mean, it's not sifting, but it'll do.
Second segment time. Time to talk more about Charles Manson and his crimes. So, less than a month after his 1967 release from prison, Manson moved to Berkeley from Los Angeles, which could have been a probation violation. Instead, after calling the San Francisco probation office upon his arrival, he was transferred to the supervision of a criminology doctoral researcher and federal probation officer, Roger Smith, until the spring of 1968. Smith worked at the Haight-Ashbury Free Medical Clinic, or HAFMC, which Manson and his family frequented. He was the type of guy, he would see somebody, and he said this in an interview, it was, Go for the pretty ones, but go for the broken pretty ones. Mm. Not the fully broken, mind you. Not the ones that are like, you know, doing Larry's and also super hot.
I believe that's the same advice they give on those alpha male podcasts.
Pretty much. He's like the pre alpha male.
Mm-hmm.
So throughout their stay in Haight, Roger Smith, as well as the HAFMC founder, David E. Smith, received funding from the National Institutes of Health to study the effects of drugs like LSD. Which, has anybody here done LSD?
I have.
Yes. Okay.
Do you guys remember how it felt?
Yeah.
Just to anybody out there who was curious, I guess.
Yeah, I didn't care for it.
It just heightens your senses, right?
I'd say the first 15 minutes are awesome, and then it's hell.
Yeah. Like a panic attack feeling kind of thing.
Yeah, mm-hmm. It's speed.
Mm-hmm.
We took it at... we were downtown, took it. It was on a piece of candy. I ate it. And then for some reason, everybody thought I should drive. And so, like, I was driving to Sparta.
Oh, God.
Yeah. So obviously, it kicks in while I'm driving. And so my brother's like, stop. There's a stop sign up there. I stop in the middle of the road. This stop sign's like a good 120 feet up still. We stop off at a convenience store to pick up some beer. And I'm the only one who's 21, so I grab the beers and I head up there and I put them on the counter. And the lady behind the counter has a glass eye. So it's just kind of going off in a random direction. And I am like, I cannot hear a word she is saying because I'm just fixated on that eye. So I probably just gave her like a $50 bill and walked out the door for all I know. Then all I could smell was popcorn for a good hour. So then we went to my friend Jessica's house. We all show up. Her dad is on acid as well.
Oh.
And he won't let us in the house. He knows us, but he's just
freaking out.
Doesn't want anybody at the house. So behind her house, or well, her parents' house, is a train trestle. And so we go on the train trestle. It's cold. And we're freezing our balls off, but whatever. And so I get the beers out, hand them all out. And because I wanted good beers, I bought good beers. And no one had a bottle opener. So we're trying to use the train tracks to break the things off. Like, we broke the necks off and just slammed beers. We're lucky no one drank glass.
Yeah.
And then we stayed there until the sun rose.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's beautiful.
And then I couldn't sleep for another day and a half.
Jesus.
Because it's speed.
Right.
Yeah, basically.
So I called into work the next day because I was like, I am on no sleep.
Mm-hmm. No, yeah. I get that.
What about you, hon?
I don't really remember.
Cool. Good story.
Fascinating.
Wait, you mean to tell me you didn't end up at a train track trying to drink beer?
Eat smoke beer?
You may have eaten the beer.
I mean, they could have.
Oh.
You were there too.
That's right.
It's the best fiber ever. Just cuts up the insides.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Cuts right through you.
So Manson.
And you can shit out a dime. Because exactly. It's Michigan. Just recycle it.
So this is when Manson's taking LSD. He's having fun. Sort of. And would use it frequently during his time there. David Smith, who had studied the effects of LSD and amphetamines in rodents, wrote that the change in Manson's personality during this time, quote, was the most abrupt Roger Smith had observed in his entire professional career.
I wonder if that broke him.
Probably a bit.
Yeah.
Now, almost everybody I saw in the documentary I watched about Manson and basically read about in this period of the 60s, you're basically having, for what is kind of projected as your first spiritual trip.
How it feels to chew 5 gum.
Yeah. And so having this like really crazy spiritual thing, I think especially then, it's like your life suddenly has this larger than you can fathom meaning. Mm-hmm. And at the time you want to, you know, grow up, do some big things. And here comes Manson mid-30s-ish. He's seen the world. Mm-hmm. He's got an idea. He's seen the, you know, kind of the evil and the dark side. And he ends up in this super, I mean, Jefferson Airplane's there. Janis Joplin lives in Haight-Ashbury. Like, all of these artists are flocking to the scene. The reason they're going there is because student housing's available. So rent's cheap. Mm-hmm. So you've got a pretty well functioning kind of artistic utopia in some ways. Plus you've got the Birds are like getting psychedelic, and then the Doors are on the horizon. Jim Morrison's there too.
I thought you meant real Birds.
I did too.
I was like, wow, even the Birds? Jesus, they were giving them like LSD bird seed? Fuck, that must have been wild to watch.
I'm tripping balls.
Two birds flying into each other.
Just a bird spinning in circles.
So anyway,
just birds sitting on train tracks trying to open their beers.
Yep.
Manson,
I talked to the birds. Yep.
Manson also read the book Stranger in a Strange Land, a science fiction novel by Robert A. Heinlein. Inspired by the burgeoning free love philosophy in Haight-Ashbury during the Summer of Love, Manson began preaching his own philosophy, which was kind of like an amalgamation of Scientology and like all the, because at the time you've got guys just literally dressed up like a plague doctor from the medieval period, waving a wand around their head, and they're just like, I've got your solutions here. Listen to what I have to say. And then like next to him, there's just a goldfish in a bowl, and he's like pointing at it. Like,
know what I mean?
Yeah. And you get it, right? Mm-hmm. So they're all, meanwhile, they're all in LSD. So basically, like I said, Manson took the Bible, Scientology, and Dale Carnegie and the Beatles and kind of made it into a religion and turned it into a following. So
Beatles were bigger than Jesus.
I mean, at the time, yeah. And plus, that was such a new sound.
Yeah.
Because initially, when Manson first learned how to play guitar in prison, he's playing like Tony Bennett, like some soulful, like singer-songwriter stuff. But as soon as he takes LSD and hears the Beatles, that's when his songs become garbage dump.
He's like, hey, George Harrison, can you take me to where you bought the instrument? Sitar World?
Exactly.
Sitar Center?
Sorry, Josh can do an amazing impersonation of the guy that works behind the counter, too.
Hello?
See?
Are you here for bongos?
So, Manson...
Love bugles.
...had already
Witch
gained
fingers.
Manson had already gained his first follower at the UC Berkeley campus.
Remember when we got our first follower?
It's so weird.
It was our mom.
That's right.
Still counts.
That's right. Listen to my podcast, Mom.
Oh, Larry. You guys are having so much fun, but can you say cunt a little less?
Not me, Ma. That's Ryan.
So he meets this librarian named Mary Brunner. He talked her into letting him sleep at her house for a few nights, an arrangement that quickly became permanent. So one of the things that he would say, especially in Manson on Manson, again, the book that he wrote, was that he was a proper fuck. He was 5'5". He was squirrely.
He was 5'5"?
Yeah. A little shorter.
I don't know. I always like...
Thought he was taller?
Yeah. Right? Like, no, he has that kind of personality, and he's like a bit shorter than me.
I think the kids call it big dick energy now.
Yes. So he's got big
I have average dick energy.
Actually, Manson, I think it's less big dick energy. It's weird big dick energy.
Yeah, like crooked dick energy.
Yeah, like that. My dick's a question mark. Figure that out.
Big taint energy.
Yeah. So
a lot of surface area between your balls and asshole there. Mm-hmm. Big taint energy.
I figured this out in the Indiana School for Boys. Woo-hoo! Let's listen to the Beatles. So... He meets, basically he just keeps meeting girls, like I said, super pretty. Like Squeaky Fromm is the next one he met, and everybody's basically heard of Lynette Fromm or Squeaky. She's the one that you're like, she's cute, but there's a rascal in them eyes. She gets freaky. Mm-hmm. She was a runaway teen.
Lady in the streets, a squeaky in the sheets. That's how I like them.
I just imagine...
Oh, no.
Just imagine Charles Manson walking up to her, and he's just like, razzmatazz! She's like, and that's when I knew he was the one for me.
A lot of these, that's one of the things that like I love about Charles Manson is that all of his followers have like weird nicknames. Yeah. And I imagine it in sort of like a Harry Potter sorting hat type of situation, or like in The Flavor of Love when he's like, they're sitting at the table and he's like doling out nicknames. Yeah. Like, is that what it was?
Very similar. Like, there's one girl named Big Judy or something.
Yeah,
like that.
Fuck. Like, I like
she
that.
Had a big booty.
Big Judy got big booty energy.
That's right.
Ooh, what do you think he would have named us?
Ooh, that's interesting.
Okay.
I mean, if we're going off the previous episodes of the podcast, there could be different names.
let's before we hate each other again.
Yeah, let's skip that question.
Yeah.
We'll bring that up in therapy in 10 years. Yep. So.
He'd look at me, you're shardy farty.
Yeah. Yeah, we got you. You're definitely squeaky number two.
That means I'm pretty.
That's right. So, as I said, she was a runaway teen, squeaky, and convinced her to live with him. And Brunner Manson soon began to attract large crowds of listeners and some dedicated followers.
She was kind of doing a podcast before it was podcasting.
Exactly. Mm-hmm.
Smart.
He targeted individuals for manipulation who were emotionally insecure and social outcasts. In his book, Love Needs Care, about his time at the Haight-Ashbury cult area place, David Smith claims that Manson attempted to reprogram their minds to submit totally to his will through the use of LSD and unconventional sexual practices.
Uh-uh. Ooh, like butt stuff.
Basically, yeah, and that would turn his followers into empty vessels that would accept anything he poured. Manson's family members,
how's your butthole, Larry?
Paul Watkins, testified that Manson would encourage group LSD trips and take lower doses himself so he could kind of keep a... It's like
me at the Smoketacular.
Yeah.
They took 20 and I took 5. So we can keep the track.
Someone had to steer this ship. Mm-hmm.
So Watkins said that Charlie's trip was to program us all to submit. By the end of his stay in Haight in April of 1968, Manson had attracted 20 or so followers, all under the supervision of his parole officer, Roger Smith, and many of the staff at the Haight-Ashbury. Yeah, that whole area. They were just like, whatever, cool.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. The probation officer is like,
meh.
Whatever you're into, I guess.
He's not passionate. Stealing.
Yeah, I know. He's not stealing cars.
He's just taking acid.
He's just having fun with his friends.
Yeah.
The core members of Manson's following eventually included Tex Watson, or Charles Watson, a musician and former actor.
Tex.
Bobby Busali, a former musician and pornographic actor.
Oh, yeah.
Brunner. Susan Atkins, Linda Kasabian, Patricia Kernwinkle, and Leslie Van Houten. The Manson family developed into a doomsday cult when Manson became fixated on the idea of an imminent apocalyptic race war between America's black population and the larger white population. And he was convinced of this by the Beatles' White Album.
That's not and what we meant.
No. But there's like literally, he thinks the song written by George Harrison, Piggies, was him talking about the bad guys. Blackbird was about the black people who were rising to the top. Yeah, they thought Blackbird.
Oh, that's what they thought. Yeah. I was going to say, I'm pretty sure that's not what Paul McCartney intended.
But the song at the core of it was Helter Skelter, which we might have to play at some point during this episode because it's fucking rules. It's a ripper. But anyway, there was symbolism in the lyrics. There was symbolism, and he was preaching it all the time. Hmm. And he was convinced the Beatles were literally telling him that. And maybe that's a byproduct of him taking LSD.
Yeah.
And eating out of garbage cans. And probably not sleeping. He's definitely...
So he's Oscar the Grouch.
Yeah.
Right.
He's basically Oscar the Grouch.
On acid.
That is the best example of one Charles Manson is I've heard yet, maybe ever. God damn. I do love doing the show because that's perfect. Now that's all I'm going to picture the next time I look at him. So
garbage dump.
I sat on a lump in my garbage dump.
Come here, Squeaky Elmo.
I mean... hey, if you're into it. So Manson told some of the Manson family that black people in America would rise up and kill all white people except for Manson and his family because they were going to hide out in the desert.
Mm.
And basically there was...
Is there some sort of like stereotype about black people in deserts I'm unaware of?
Well, what's crazy to me is like he literally thinks they're all going to pile up into dune buggies, drive out into
Mad
the
Max
desert.
Mad Max style?
Like Death Valley 69 style and start a commune. They're going to stay there, mm-hmm. then come out of the desert, and they'll be the only white people left after all the black people kill the white people. And they'll be like, damn, we regret doing what we did.
Yeah, there are so many great places to hide in a desert.
Yeah.
Said the lizard.
We're the only white people. All the ranch is ours.
So, anyway, so his followers believed this. And that's what's crazy is that one of the documentaries I saw, one of the former Manson family members basically looked just like I was looking at, like a retired secretary from some job that I would have seen in my life. Basically, she looked like somebody my mom would hang out with to knit. And she's like, yeah, I was part of the cult. Yeah, I fucked Charles Manson. Yeah, I thought the black and whites were going to kill each other. That was just the way it was. It's crazy to hear. So they were not intelligent, according to him, to survive on their own. Typical. Yeah. That is so cult
thinking.
That is
a cult thing. Yeah. Yep.
So Manson adopted the term helter skelter, which is actually, and I don't know if you know this, Josh, I know you're probably the resident biggest Beatles fan, or maybe Larry is, I'm not sure. But helter skelter is the term for the slides that they have in London or British circuses or carnivals. Mm-hmm. So when they talk about
as menacing as Charles thought.
No, but it's like in the song, it's like, when I get to the top, I go down. It's all about the slide that they go down.
Helter skelter.
Yeah. And the song is kind of that chaotic, you know, 50s, 60s carnival vibe to it. Mm-hmm. So it makes more sense when you know what they're talking about. But to him, it's like, yeah, that's the blacks. They're at the bottom and they'll rise to the top when the big war happens.
I've got blisters on my fingers.
Yeah, exactly.
And my bum from that hot slide.
Ooh. Ooh. So this continued to happen. And actually, the night of the murders, now this is where we get into the murders. It's funny because every single time they talk about when something big happens, they're like, Manson was actually picking up poontang at the local swimming hole. Like it's like the crazy, like younger white kids on acid are the ones that are like envisioning these ideas he's coming up with while they're spinning this white album. Meanwhile, Manson's just like staring at a goat. Like, can you hear my thoughts? Like literally, and they're like, he's Jesus. But like literally, that's what's happening. He picks up this other girl named like Stephanie at the time, right? And it's so funny, in one of the docs she's talking, like she's like, yeah, and he grabbed my hand and he made sweet, sweet love to me, and he took me back to Spawn Ranch, which is, they stayed at this movie ranch basically. They hijacked and they go back to this ranch and she's like, I'm your girl, right, Charles? And he's like, yeah, sure. Go over there for a little while. Then he like goes in another house, has sex with somebody else. Like that's his mentality. He's like, I ain't saying no to no woman. A woman needs my love. Ain't like that boy's Holmes. My poor butthole. But I mean, like that's what he thought. I mean, just like go with the flow, do what you do. And meanwhile, these guys are just going into crazy angry mode because they're sitting around eating garbage. And eventually some of the Manson family members commit murders in LA. The Manson family gained national notoriety after the murder of actress Sharon Tate, who is, I mean, she is beautiful. And she's played by Margot Robbie in the movie Once Upon a Time in Hollywood. And she, I mean, it's the same thing, like very, very beautiful women. So not only was it Sharon Tate, but there were four others in the home, the heiress to the Folgers fortune, like just
that coffee money.
Yeah. That
like everybody drinks coffee.
Yeah. It's like one of the few things I can say. Yeah, I get it. That's an empire.
Right.
Best part of waking up. I mean, like, I get it. But then you don't. And because you were the... Anyway, so...
person.
So it was Tex Watson, who I mentioned earlier. That was his nickname because his first name was Charles. But Tex, he's the one who said, "I'm the devil here to do the devil's work," or whatever. To the and it, what's crazy is when they broke into this house, all those these famous like rich people are sleeping. Sharon Tate's 8.5 months pregnant. Mm-hmm. So April, you can already envision that.
Oh yeah,
she farts wrong. That baby's coming.
Oh for sure.
So she's laying there. One of the girls, I guess, sees one of these hippie girls from the commune walking through and waves at her because it's just like, this is the 60s, right. Man. Whatever.
Hey, hey, welcome.
Don't go in the pool.
The Shasta's in the fridge. Help yourself.
There's
a crudité platter on the counter.
Exactly.
Go for it.
Never mind the charcuterie board we left out.
Wow, you got through charcuterie.
I know.
That's impressive.
Season 5.5. Coming in strong.
Paralysis still off the table.
Yep. Yeah. Don't even. So Tex Watson and three other members of the family committed the Tate LaBianca murders because there was two nights back, basically back to back. Now, the first night, the night in question where the Sharon Tate was murdered, Manson was not there. Okay. And again, I didn't know this until I basically first found out what the real truth behind the Manson family murders were when I got a little older. But so they, while it was later accepted at trial that Manson never expressly ordered the murders, his behavior was deemed to warrant a conviction of first degree murder and conspiracy to commit murder. Evidence pointed to Manson's obsession with inciting a race war by killing those he thought were pigs and his belief that this would show the N-words how to do the same.
Easy, Joe Rogan.
Hey. Family members were also responsible for other assaults, thefts, crimes, and the attempted assassination, because Squeaky did this assassination, attempted assassination by ours truly, President Gerald Ford, man who couldn't even fall down right.
One time and they never let you forget.
Right?
Poor guy. Oh boy.
Guy was an athlete.
Yeah, I know, right? He was. It was Squeaky that tried to do it, by the way, if I didn't mention, in Sacramento. So, while it is often thought that Manson never murdered or attempted to murder anyone himself, true crime writer James Buddy Day, in his book Hippie Cult Leader, The Last Words of Charles Manson, claimed that Manson shot drug dealer Bernard Crow on July 1st, 1969, but Crow survived. He had a
winged
name.
Him.
He had a name. I know I said like Babadook Jones or whatever it was, but I can't remember what it was. But his real name was actually Bernard Crow. So after the convictions, the court held a separate hearing before the same jury to determine if the defendants should receive the death sentence. Now, I would say if you're interested, go look at the trial footage from this after they committed these murders. We didn't get into the gory details, but these people were viciously murdered. And words like in blood were painted helter skelter, which was spelled wrong. H-E-A-L-T-E-R skelter.
Helter skelter.
So not only are they getting the song titles wrong, they're writing it in blood. And it doesn't that just make it look stupider? It's like,
it does.
Makes it look stupider.
It's like
he's painting blood with his words.
Exactly. But it's like, I'm trying to think of a famous song if you wrote it wrong out loud. Like, it's just like Kiss from a Rose, but Rose is spelled
R-O-Z-E-R-O-O-S-E.
Kiss from a Roose. Yeah, that Seal song really inspired me to murder.
I mean, there was a time that was played so much. I get it.
Yeah.
It's because that was the one with the Batman with the nipples, right?
Oh, my God. It was in every... they played that in every goddamn dentist office in the 90s.
They did. You're right. Immediately,
I could... The Muzak version, too. Mm-hmm.
I could smell the new toothbrushes as soon as you said that.
Yep.
So each of the three female defendants, Atkins, Van Houten, and Krenwinkel, took the stand. And they look young. They're singing as they go into the courtroom. I mean, I can imagine if you were like a religious person during this time. I mean, this is pre The Exorcist. Mm-hmm. There's a bit of satanic panic happening here. Mm-hmm. It's about to go full fucking bloom in the 70s and even worse in the 80s.
Oh, yeah.
But like, this was scary.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I mean, because again, a pregnant actress gets murdered and her cohorts, you know, like Jay Sebring, he was like a hairstylist. He was actually, and I'll say this, he's like one of the rare hairstylists who's not
interior decorator.
Not one for the boys, we'll say. He was actually dating Sharon Tate at one point.
Oh, okay.
But they were really close friends and he was there and he was murdered. And, you know, it's just scary to think, because at the time it wasn't so much like, oh my God, these, you know, horrible thing, this actress. It was more like, these kids have got it wrong. They're inspired by the devil. And they're writing these Beatles songs. I mean, this is part of why you got these people who are like, the music's inspiring violence and all that sort of thing. So they provided graphic details of the murders and testified that Manson was not involved. According to the female defendants, they had committed the crimes in order to help fellow Manson family member Bobby Boucher get out of jail, where he was being held for the murder of Gary Hinman. It was a bad drug deal that had happened.
Okay.
Because he was still had his hands in other pies at the time. So he would have like, okay, we'll go do a drug deal. He would also pimp out the girls. Like, one of his first jobs he wanted to do in prison was to become a pimp. And like, he would talk to like African-American gentlemen and be like, excuse me, sir, how do I become a pimp?
I don't know.
Man, I just stole.
I was public intoxication. What do I know about pimping?
I drove a cement truck into a ball pit park. What are you trying to say? My name is Grover Washington, and even though I did that...
And I'm not the famous jazz musician, by the way.
That's right.
It's just coincidental.
Right.
I'm just imagining... I was arrested for dressing up like a clown and having sex with a bird. Excuse me.
Yeah. If you need someone to help you have sex with a bird, I'm your man. But I know nothing of the pimp game. Sir.
God.
Respectfully.
Always. So the female defendants testified that the Tate-LaBianca murders were intended to be copycat crimes. And this is what's crazy is the cops at the time were like, yeah, there's two house burglary murder things that happened back to back, but we don't think there's any similarities, even though they wrote the lyrics to like Beatles songs on both crime scenes. Like, no affiliation. No,
two different Beatles songs.
And this one,
one says Abbey Road.
Yeah, I mean, it's clearly not the
Skelter Skelter.
I think it was a Dutch terrorist.
Are you sure it's Abbey Road? It says a boy road.
This one says Led Zeppelin 4. I'm really confused. It's not even out yet.
I think they're a fan of the greatest hits, but they misspelled the word one.
Oh.
Relolver.
Who's the ticks man?
Who's Sergeant Pooper? It's Josh.
Oh. Happiness is a warm gum?
Who's John Lemon?
It's that squirrely guy twirling his mustache shaped like a lemon out there.
Who's Yo-Yo-Yo-Yo-Ho?
I don't like Yo-Yo-Yo-Yo. She broke up the buttles.
All right, dude. I'm more of a Rollicking Stones fan, actually.
I get you. So,
it's good to be back.
Yeah, it is. Mm-hmm. Similar to the Hinman killing, Atkins, Krenwinkel, and Van Houten claim they did this under the direction of the state's prime witness, Linda Kasabian. The defendants did not express remorse for the killings, which is crazy. I mean, it really was ingrained in their heads that these people were pigs. Like, they were the problem. They were the reason they were eating out of garbage, living in dune buggy desert land. Mm-hmm. you know, and I didn't even say it yet, which is insane to me. But part of the reason that we have recordings of Charles Manson is because he befriended one of the Beach Boys to the point where, and it's funny too, because you look at the Beach Boys and it's like, which one of them was the hunky one with no talent, but like the body for, and was basically the one that with the music, the drummer.
Yeah.
It's Daniel Wilson. I mean, Brian Wilson is the song genius, but he's the one that comes up with the harmonies. He was the producer, but this guy was the drummer and he knew it and he felt inadequate at the time. Charles comes along. He's got naked women everywhere and LSD.
Mm-hmm.
And basically it's like, cool, bro. Maybe we can adapt. Because at that time, all the music's adapting too. Mm-hmm. Like Beach Boys started off that surf rock and now everything's trippy. So it's like they're having a rough time at the time. And Charles comes in here with these weird freak folk songs.
How can we make beach going different?
Exactly. Well, yeah. And it's the thing is that they thought they had to expand their thing. And then, you know, Pet Sounds is amazing. There's incredible Beach Boys stuff. Okay. I get you.
It's
get
overrated. You. It's I think
there's better albums of the time.
You know, like I people like maybe it's super influential or whatever, but I'm like,
I get the infatuation with the Beatles at the time. Because I would have been like, whoa, you can do this. You can make concept albums or whatever.
The Beatles, yes. The Beach Boys, yeah, they have never done anything for me.
I get it. And if you like the Beach Boys, cool.
I did like Kokomo.
Mm-hmm.
I did like that.
Is that the first one with John Stamos as their drummer? Because John Stamos is their drummer.
Yeah, he's
their
drummer now. Yeah.
Yep.
Another hunky guy.
Ooh, mm-hmm. So dreamy. So on, let's see. So like I said, they were like, we killed him, whatever. They were pigs. And when they had their final sentencing, they all shaved their heads.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
They all wrote X's and shit on their foreheads. They
didn't just write, they carved it, right? Like,
no, yeah, it was creepy. Which, I mean, that's again, you're watching. I mean, this was a huge trial. It was nine
an X
half.
Or a K. These guys are awful.
Can't even spell X right. Just one letter.
But that's the thing is,
not E C K S. Why would you spell it out phonetically?
So, on March 4th, 1971, during the sentencing hearings, Manson trimmed his beard to a fork and shaved his head, telling the media, quote, "I am the devil and the devil always has a bald head." Which is, again,
why are you looking at me?
I don't. I have a luscious head of hair, actually.
Satan?
Yeah.
I'm glad you're here. How was your break, Satan?
Very relaxing.
Oh, yeah. That's good. Yeah. Did you go to bed too with Larry at about 8?
I'm more of a night owl.
Oh, yeah. Mm. Nice.
Okay.
Good to have you back. So, the state prosecutor, Vincent Bugliosi, later speculated in his book, Helter Skelter, that they refrained from doing so in order to not appear to be completely controlled by Manson. Because the kids did not shave their heads initially. Oh, okay. As they had when they each... yes, you're right. April was right. They did carve an X into their foreheads earlier in the trial. On March 29th, 1971, the jury sentenced all four defendants to death. Ouch. There's just an S on my head. Yeah. I'm like, super cool.
There's the one guy that walks in. He carved in, like, Rachel Summers. Mm-hmm. Like, no, dude, an S. X.
Not your ex, just an X.
Hyphenated name. You really should have.
This guy went fucking straight critical with it, man. We actually wrote
okay,
her name.
Literal Larry.
That was good. So anyway, when the female defendants were led into the courtroom, each of them had shaved their heads, as had Manson. After hearing the sentence, Atkins shouted to the jury, quote, "Better lock your doors and watch your kids."
Ooh. That's the worst version of the Antoine Dodson song.
Yeah, right?
The Manson murder trial was the longest murder trial in American history when it occurred, lasting 9.5 months.
Wow.
The trial was among the most publicized American criminal cases of the 20th century and was dubbed the Trial of the Century, which I feel like every trial.
Wasn't like that even the OJ Simpson?
Yeah. How's the juice doing, you think?
I'm sure he's doing great.
Yeah.
Probably golfing.
Seems to be living the fucking life on Twitter, I'll tell you that much.
Hello, Twitter world.
Anyway, juice. So the jury had been sequestered for 225 days, longer than any jury before it. The trial transcript ran to 209 volumes of 31,716 pages.
Good Lord.
Again, this is why cops, when they see stuff in a crime scene, they're like, fuck. Like they see like a rogue hand. They're like, great. There's 2 days worth of paperwork.
Well, hold on. What if we shoot him?
And get out of paperwork? Jones, you're a genius. So.
Oh, sorry.
No, you don't have to say sorry this time.
He was specifically hired for that job.
Finally.
You finally did what you were meant to do. So,
hey, they say find a passion and go.
That's right.
That's true. So as in all stories, on January 1st, 2017, Manson was being held at Corcoran Prison when he was rushed to Mercy Hospital in downtown Bakersfield because he was suffering from gastrointestinal bleeding. A source told the LA Times that Manson was very ill, and TMZ reported that his doctors considered him too weak for surgery that normally would be performed in cases such as his. He was returned to prison on January 6th, and the nature of his treatment was not disclosed. But on November 15th, 2017, an unauthorized source said that Manson had returned to a hospital in Bakersfield, but the California Department of Corrections Rehabilitation did not confirm this in conformity with state and federal medical privacy laws. So there was a bunch of back and forth, and everyone was speculating that he was really sick towards this in 2017, because I remember specifically somebody, some true crime guy was like, get better, Charlie. And I'm like,
what?
Why? But anyway, he died from cardiac arrest resulting from respiratory failure brought on by colon cancer at the hospital on November 19th, 2017. And that is Charles Manson, folks. Huh. Yeah, he died of the poop thing. But then respiratory failure. So he's like,
the poop thing.
Anyway, get your butt checked. We are getting older. So, as do we on all shows, it is time for us to have a verdict. In one corner, back in black. Four podcasters you know and don't trust.
Who can spell?
That's right. We could spell Helter Skelter.
Maybe not pronounce it, but we can spell it.
That's right. The other corner, we got a guy flailing his arms. He's got the Kmart symbol on his forehead. And we have to say, do we think Manson was responsible? Do we think he was crazy? Do we think the right judgment fell? He spent the rest of his life in prison. And as Josh said, as he did play the middle clip, he spent almost all his life in jail, so he didn't really know, I wouldn't say, any other way. But then again, does that necessarily make him innocent of a crime? So I'm going to go to you, Josh. What do you think?
There's a lot to think about here. His early life being in these horrible schools, all he's ever known is violence.
Right.
And so, first off, I want to say I think he's a product of that. Who knows what? I mean, clearly the guy was very smart. He was very influential. He probably would have had a different career path had he not had all those horrible things happen. But that doesn't matter. He did what he did. As far as do I think he was behind it? Well, he was indoctrinating these young minds, these young troubled minds, about massive genocide. So, yeah, I definitely think he was behind it. He knew how to talk to them and how to make them, how to put that bug in their ear to make them a little.
It was
cuckoo.
Yeah. I appreciate your opinion, sir. April.
This is a tough one for me because I think, like Josh had said, there's a lot to be said for the fact that, like, the way he grew up was super influential on his behavior later in life, and all the LSD and all the things that he did. Like, he was not mentally sound at any point, I don't think. But like, the one thing that I have stuck in my craw, because like initially I was like, was he? I don't. But the thing that I keep coming back to is the statement that you had made, that when everyone else was taking LSD, he took less.
Right.
And to me, that's like a surefire sign of like he was
competent
enough to know that he was manipulating minds.
Right.
So I would say, yeah, I think while he wasn't like holding the knife, I think he's just as much guilty as the people who murdered. So,
Lawrence,
I always go back and forth on this because he didn't do it. Mm. You know what I mean? He didn't commit the murders. At what point are people responsible for their own actions?
I mean, he got pretty close to it. He did. He's the second night of the murders that they went out on. I mean, he was there per se. He just couldn't do it.
Right.
There was a point where
he's an accessory.
He kind of chickened out.
I think it's more like premeditation than it would be like him being guilty of murder. Yeah, I think, like you said, it's more of an accessory.
It's a very strange
situation.
Very strange for trial and
It's a once in a lifetime scenario.
Yeah,
I think
the thing I think is very peculiar here is that he did not actually kill anybody,
right?
But he spent the rest of his life in prison.
Yeah, it seems excessive.
That doesn't influence her, though.
But
you're right. And it's all based on
any crime and saying, like, yeah, I think that the world is kind of messed up. Dude, look around you. Mm-hmm. All you have to do is go on the internet and you see people that are talking about how, like, oh, the damn left, the damn right. And is that any worse?
Right.
The only thing I think, what I come down to, I finally, before I say, yeah, I think he belongs in prison, is that there was a history to him. Like, there's a history of crimes there.
Yeah.
So it's not like he was caught, you know, innocent.
Right. Who's to say he's not going to reoffend anyways? Right. Mm-hmm. Sure.
He's clearly nuts, too. I want to throw this question out there here. Do you think that was kind of like the death of the free love 60s? Did he put the knife into the heart there?
Yeah, I think that was the LSD trip that ended with blood everywhere. Because I didn't mention this, but like they were all fucking high as fuck on LSD the times that they committed those murders.
Awful.
Yeah, I know. Well, even Charlie did the same thing. The second night when he went out with them, he got super high up and eventually it was too much. He's like, I came down now and I'm going home. So.
Yep.
Yeah, I guess I'll round it out by saying it's a tricky one, but yes, I think that he influenced it enough to safely say, especially going back in time and really dissecting the crimes and really thinking about like his influence on them, it eventually would have led to something else down the road.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I think it probably saved lives getting them out of that situation, because a lot of those female followers who came part of that group, they just never been loved by a man. So literally they got their mind blown by this guy.
Even while he was in jail, he like met and married someone, didn't he? So, and like, she even in jail, he was able to like manipulate women into, and she was quite a bit younger than he was, wasn't
attractive,
she?
Yeah. Yes.
So now I did read, interestingly enough, that the woman that he married before he died, or was like slated to marry, I think they got the marriage certificate, but then never actually got married because he was sick. The whole reason she claims, the whole reason that she wanted to marry him was so that when he died, she would have the like the rights to his body, and she wanted to make like an attraction out of it. Yeah, that's what rumor, but they never got married officially. So,
oh, wow. Yeah, if anybody has a link to that, post it on the Facebook group, because that's awesome.
I would be curious to know what Charles Manson Jr. is up to these days.
Well, that's what Google's for, and that's been your verdict.
Also, did you know that he was friends with Danny Trejo?
Really?
Prison? Yeah. I think it was when he was imprisoned in L.A. or like a state penitentiary. He was there with Danny Trejo. Mm-hmm.
Now part of the, I won't spoil that. He's in another thing that's big. So it's good to see good character actors yes. get good parts.
For sure.
Mm-hmm. And that's been your episode. Thank you for listening. Mm-hmm. 5 stars will get you shout outs. Please give us all those on all the things, whatever we're on. Please rate, review. You can even rate us on Spotify, and I see that some of you have, so thank you.
Nice.
Also, future episodes, we'll see. We'll cover them. You'll see. You'll see it in the mm-hmm. title.
Yeah.
Oh, God. Things we are
promise,
so easy.
We promise we'll spell them right, though.
Yeah.
The Quittens?
We got to misspell this one like Charles Meanson.
He was really mean, man.
He's a mean guy.
Does anybody have anything they want to throw out there before we end this bad bear?
I poop and pee out the same hole.
I don't remember that.
That was like the Siri version of me.
Mm-hmm. It was a bit robotic, but I still liked it.
Yeah. All right. We'll see you next week on another episode of the Conspiracy Therapy Podcast. Have a great one, guys.
This has been a presentation of Beer City Media.